safety checklists improve outcomes, multilingual healthcare, reducing workplace stress for nurses, and we're going to wrap up with part two of our segment on stroke awareness and community education resources. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome all of you to this program this week. If you haven't already done so, make sure you take an opportunity to head over and check out the resources available for you over at nursingshow.com. We have, of course, all of the links discussed in every episode and the news items and additional tip resources and things associated with interviews, all available for you in the show notes there, plus additional articles, links to support our advertisers. We do need you to continue to support our advertisers so that they will continue to support us, and a whole lot more, all available over at nursingshow.com. You can sign up for the Nursing Show email newsletter and get all those links every week sent to you. You can also, of course, check out our Facebook page and Twitter and everything else. So go ahead and visit nursingshow.com. If you'd like to get back in touch with us, of course, I love to hear from you, and I will attempt to make sure I get back to each and every one of you, basically. I return every email I get and try to keep in touch with each person that sends things to me. So if you would like to send in a link for a future news item, perhaps an idea for a future tip of the week, or a correction in an episode. If I've made a mistake, we need to make sure we get it correct. All of that can be done. Just send me an email to nursingshow@gmail.com. You can also reach me via Twitter and Facebook under the handle PodMedic, twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic. And of course, again, become a fan of the Nursing Show fan page over at facebook.com/nursingshow. Just click the like button right there at the top of the page. We have a lot going on, and I did want to remind you that I don't know if you realize, I produce other shows. Of course, insightsinnursing.com is one of the podcasts that I produce as a panel discussion. Also, some great things I've been working with the discovernursing.com folks and the folks over at the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future, and we have their Nursing Notes Live podcast. You can find that in iTunes, or you can go to nursingnoteslive.com and find the Nursing Notes page over on Facebook. And I just urge you to check out the great things they do. You've probably been seeing the advertisements on the TV or listening to them on the radio as they just go out there and try to promote what we do as nurses every day and continue to support the work we do in the community and in our facilities and in our mentoring of new and upcoming nurses. So I just wanted to let you know that there's some good stuff every single month over at nursingnoteslive.com, and you ought to check that podcast out as well. Moving on to this week's news items, let's jump on in and take a look here. First off, safety checklists. This is something that we have used sporadically, I think, in many places, off and on. They come and go. We use these checklists, and then they seem to fall by the wayside. However, a recent study coming out of Johns Hopkins University Hospital in tandem with a series of hospitals in Michigan and Rhode Island have really found a groundbreaking effect of using these types of safety-based checklists along with a culture of being able to speak out against safety violations and to encourage change and to encourage people to help each other be more aware of safety. All has had a significant impact on not just infection control, but on saving lives. Now, it would follow that if we can reduce infections, we would keep patients alive, but that's not necessarily always the case. Perhaps patients were dying of comorbid factors. So the study that was initially shown to have virtually eliminated central line infections because of the use of a safety checklist dealing with central line infection placement and management with physicians, nurses, and other care providers has now been re-examined, and that study has looked at ultimate outcome, how many of these patients died. And it indeed found that by virtually eliminating central line infections in ICU environments, it had the effect of saving 10% more patients' lives. And that's a significant event. In fact, the study in the article here has said that thousands of people are alive today because of this simple safety checklist process and the culture change that goes along with it. And that's why I said earlier that when I started out this discussion on checklists was, you know, we see checklists come and go. And they come for a while and then they just don't stick around. Because unless you change the underlying culture behind whatever's been going on before, then there's really not going to be any buy-in for the checklist. And we need to have that buy-in in order to encourage the staff to really understand why they're doing this checklist. So we have to educate them about the science of safety, about the different aspects that the checklist focuses on, the studies and the research behind it. So they say, hey, this isn't just a random application of somebody's great idea. This is science and research-based knowledge being applied back to improving patient outcomes. And so I urge you to check this article out. It's pretty significant, and especially if you're in infusion care, ICU nurse, or really any aspect of the hospital setting, I think this type of checklist can lend itself to many aspects of nursing care, especially when we think about the numbers of hospital-based infections. We talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show when we discussed healthcare-acquired infections. The numbers of hospital-based infections that reach our patients, anything we can do to reduce, and according to this, virtually eliminate them from a specific source of infection is pretty amazing. So I'd urge you to check this out. And again, there will be a link in the show notes for this particular article, as well as the others, of course. Next up in the news, a look at multilingual healthcare providing. When we think about patients, and you know, there's a statement at the beginning of this article that is kind of a duh statement, okay? And I'll read it to you, and you can tell me if you just go, well, duh. Having healthcare providers speak the same language as their patients translates into less confusion and better quality care. Okay? Are we all in agreement here? Well, duh, right? That means that if I can understand you and you can understand me, we can communicate better, and the knowledge that we have to impart to each other, whether it's a nurse educating a patient or a patient trying to describe history and symptoms to a nurse or other healthcare professional, obviously we're going to have a better outcome at the other end. So what does this mean? Well, I think it encourages that we need more diversity in the workforce. We need to be reaching out to people who speak other languages. We should encourage perhaps language-based studies along with our nursing studies. Hey, I know, we're already busy enough in nursing school, right? I mean, I get it. It's one of the most intensive programs out there. But I think that there might be some opportunity to incorporate language-based studies into the nursing programs in some respect, because certainly this could have a positive effect on our patients. We also need to make sure that the resources to readily translate between our patients are easily accessible and available, because if you're trying to ask a patient a simple question, you're going to sit there and make a decision, is it worth my time to go and get the translation line set up to ask this patient when the last time they went to the bathroom was? It's going to take 10 minutes to call in, and I have to you have to get the translator on the line and then back and forth. It's not worth that trouble. So the ball may get dropped just because, I don't want to say laziness, but in the interest of time management, you don't have the time to spend 15 minutes on a simple question. So we need to find other ways to do this. We need to make sure that these resources are readily available and more easily accessible and useful for our patients. And it may include a text-based translation service for those patients that can read. They can read and write, and we can give them a keyboard or computer system. We can access text-based translation services that may be more efficient for us to use. So there's a lot of things we can do. Certainly, taking language classes and expanding your knowledge of other languages, especially the languages, of course, that might make up a larger portion of your patient population, whether you live in a place that has a higher level of Hispanic-speaking members or a larger number of Chinese or any other language. If you live in that type of location, then it might make sense for you to take some language classes, get a sense of the healthcare benefits. You know, there's a great podcast out there called the Medical Spanish Podcast. Dr. Molly is a good friend of mine, and she does a fantastic job of putting together the Medical Spanish podcast and putting together little dialogues for different aspects of care, asking patients basic history questions and describing symptoms and treatment and different imaging and all the kinds of things that you might have to do with a patient in Spanish. You can find that in iTunes and over at medicalspanish.com or medicalspanishpodcast.com. But great, just a great podcast. And you can find other resources similar to that out there. Even if they're not medically focused, there are a lot of language learning programs and online tutorials and things out there just to give you, if nothing else, a basic overview. So think about that. Think about what you would do to apply better language resources and learning to your patient population. Finally, an interesting look at nurses reducing and managing their own stress levels. I've talked about this before on the show, and I think we've talked about this anytime I talk to other nurses. It often comes up that we're not the best at taking care of ourselves. We're great caregivers. It's what we do. It's what brought us to nursing in many cases. But it means that we are more focused on others and not as much on ourselves. And so we tend to start heaping things on, and we tend to carry things with us, and we tend to let the workplace stress environment get to us much more frequently. So how do we deal with that? Well, an interesting study, Kent State University in Ohio has been working with a Donna Karen program called Urban Zen. And it focuses on a stress relief and burnout program using yoga and other Eastern meditative practices to reduce your stress levels. And they instituted this in a study with, first of all, in the first round, a group of accelerated nursing program students to see if they could help relieve the stress of just being in part of an accelerated nursing program. And they had some positive effects, and they wanted to see, they're now expanding this program outward and are sharing the results and the techniques and the practices with the nursing community. And I'm intrigued by this. Last year when I went to the AACN conference in Washington, D.C. with the critical care nurses, there was a holistic self-healing area there. There were some kind of a walk, a labyrinth, the music, an area where they played like New Age music, and they had all kinds of things going on there to help just to provide you a place where you could just go and have your own place to sit. The folks at Johnson & Johnson at Blog World in the healthcare, social healthcare track provided as a matter of course for the attendees in the social healthcare track, massage therapists, so you could go back and get a little quick 10-minute, 15-minute massage in a little cubby that they had set up with curtains in the back of the room where we were holding our talks. So in between sessions, you could jump back there and grab one of the massage therapists, go in the back in these little cubbies and, you know, sit on the chair and get a quick massage just to help relax. And just a great idea to provide ways to reduce the stress and help you kind of focus and get some of the stress out of your body. I think it's fantastic. And I would encourage you to think about what you can do to deal with stress, whether it's exercise, extracurricular activities, family time, religion or church or your faith journey, whatever the case may be, and this Urban Zen program, great ways to improve the way you take care of yourself and, as a result, improve the way you take care of your patients. So check out the links for this and the other articles in the show notes. You'll find that over at nursingshow.com. And these pretty interesting news articles this week, and you might want to really check out the additional information and think about how they apply to your own nursing practice. Time to jump into this week's tip of the week. And again, we're going to pick up on part two of the segment we started last week on community education and awareness resources that are available for you to build a community education program. And this is not just for lay people in the community or the public at large, but also for members of your healthcare community to encourage them to understand what's going on with stroke care and how to better be aware of, assess, recognize, and treat stroke patients in your region. And so these resources are out there for you. And let's jump into the second half of that segment we started last week on awareness and community resources for stroke education. So let's go ahead and start off. We're going to jump into part two here of our segment on community stroke awareness and education and prevention. And just a lot of information here, and I decided to make it a two-part section. So we'll be picking up. If you want to catch part one, you can find that available in last week's episode of The Nursing Show. But let's jump into part two. We just finished up talking about some of the risk factors associated with stroke, about which we need to educate people. But who are we going to educate? And we'll talk about that here, beginning this segment. So who do you talk to? We've talked a little bit about that when we talk about, you know, diabetes audience, the hypertension patient, the recent MI patient. All these patients are good for this. But what about other bigger audiences, perhaps? You need to think about this because it's important to understand your audience when you're planning for education. And so those of you that are educators, you know, this is the duh moment, right? Because it's like, of course you have to think about your audience. But I think it's important to say that because you can tailor your message to whoever you're talking to and you can raise or lower the bar for them. You want to make sure you're understanding the minimum education level for your patients. So if you're talking to a group of medical professionals, a group of other nurses, or physicians, or anybody in the healthcare environment, you can use big healthcare words. But when you're talking to a patient on the street and you talk to them about, I want to come and tell you about cerebrovascular accidents, they're going to go, what? Oh, you know, CVAs, huh? Strokes. Oh, my grandma had a stroke. So you've got to use language that people understand and talk to their level so that they can be getting the educational experience that you're intending. You also need to make sure, again, including healthcare professionals in any audience that you're thinking about, because anytime you educate more healthcare professionals, they take that education and spread it out to their patients. So keep these other healthcare members in your community in mind. Let your risk factors define the public audience. And again, think about your diabetes classes, your smoking cessation programs, other public healthcare environments where people are getting education or getting counseling. There may be an opportunity for you to come in and tie in a stroke session or a stroke component in with that other education. Tailor presentation on their need to know. Why do I say this? Well, you know, you might be talking to a high school audience. They're not necessarily at a great risk for stroke. Let's say that not many of them smoke. We all know they're probably using some alcohol or drugs, but you know, that's, I'm a parent of teenagers right now, and you know, that's all I think about. We worry about a lot of these things, but certainly they have a lower risk factor for some of those unusual modifiable risk factors. But maybe we can talk to them about changing their lifelong lifestyles, smoking cessation for those who smoke. You can tailor the presentation for them. You can approach them as, hey, you can be a hero in your community by being one of those people who knows CPR and who is able to recognize some of these big emergencies like choking patients and stroke patients because you could save your grandma's life, right? So tailor the presentation so that it's appropriate to the audience to whom you're speaking and make that important adjustment. What about venues? Well, of course, healthcare facilities for both medical professionals and the public at large make great locations. They're centrally located. They have classroom facilities or meeting rooms that you can hold a training session in. They may not be convenient for everybody, but hey, you're right there anyway because maybe you're working there and it's easy for you to, you know, move from one thing to go and teach your stroke class during a break or at the end of your shift or whatever the case may be. It's important for you to be aware that there's all those resources out there. And if not at your facility, maybe you travel to a neighboring facility and use their facilities to teach in a different location. You want to think about local healthcare professionals. There are local physicians, again, dentists, physical therapy operations, and they all have a physical location where you could come in and talk about stroke to that person, that medical professional and their staff, offer to do a stroke session for their medical professionals in their particular operation. You can talk to civic organizations. And the reason this is important, not just because of the educational aspects, but many civic organizations donate money. And so if you're looking for funding for an expanded stroke awareness program in your community, it might make sense to go and talk to your local civic organizations first. Use the whatever funding or resources you can pull together to go and talk to them first and go to them and make part of that presentation. Again, operate on that need to know basis. They need to know how this can affect the community at large and how support for a broader stroke awareness program that may cost the community an additional $5,000 over the next year will make it available to save X number of lives. You know, if we can improve stroke awareness, we have this many strokes in our community, and our goal would be to reduce the number of people with long-term disability from stroke in this community by 10% over the next 5 years. By using this stroke awareness program. You know, those are numbers they can get behind, and those are numbers they can donate to. And so think about that as an opportunity. Also consider church groups, community outreach groups, organizations like Meals on Wheels and others make great opportunities. They're out there in the communities. They're there all the time. The church organizations have, you know, that elderly population that's going to church. I know in my church, we see people at all ages, and certainly we have an elderly population in our church. Being aware and teaching about stroke awareness in that location, it's a community site for gathering for church and other organizations in many churches. And so by training people there, you are training people where they gather. Think about, heck, supermarket employees. See if the supermarket owners, managers would let you come in and do a training for their employees to recognize stroke for their customers. And they can make a big press release about it that they're trying to serve the community. It can be a big win-win for everybody. Your schools at all levels can have information about stroke, and even the elementary schools, you can talk a little bit about stroke and use it as a healthy lifestyles approach, where you're telling them that this is one of the things that can happen if you don't have a healthy lifestyle. Why shouldn't you smoke? Why shouldn't you have a healthy diet and exercise and everything else? You can build that into the elementary school level and then, you know, make it more and more complex and more appropriate as they get older, but it's certainly good to think about that. Also, make sure you're talking to your patients. So, you have a patient who's come in and had a stroke. Talk to them and their patients, the patients and their families. You're going to be educating them. Ask them, hey, you know what? What community organization or group do you belong to? And maybe we can talk to them about stroke, since I know it's important to you now, and it's going to be important to them because it happened to you. Maybe we can use that as an opportunity to teach them to be more aware and watch for this in their family members. It's a great way to get your foot in the door with some organizations, and it might be the Little League coaches. It doesn't matter. Again, be open to teaching any group of people. And providing that education, and whether it's CPR training, you can tie it in with a lot of different things. All right, the good stuff. What are those resources? Okay, well, all right, you want me to teach a stroke course in my community. Where am I going to get the stuff for that? Well, I'm going to tell you, there is so much stuff. I could do hours on this. There is so many resources out there. First off, check this out. It's a PSA put together for free for you on the National Institutes of Health website. So how was that? That was pretty amazing. Now, we also have the stroke.nih.gov site, and that's the main stroke website for the National Institutes of Health. They have handouts that these PSAs are available there. You can get a radio PSA, a video PSA. You can go to your local radio station and ask them to play the stroke awareness PSA once a day for a month. You're having stroke awareness month in your community. They've got to do so much public outreach anyway. This gives them a way to use some of that public outreach that they have to do, and it's a free PSA, and it's courtesy of your organization, your facility, whatever the case may be. You can put that PSA on their radio station. Posters that can be printed out or ordered, continuing education for medical professionals that can be done online, or you can download the materials and teach it in-house. All of these things are available over at stroke.nih.gov. So I can't say enough about it. I mean, there's so much there, PDFs that can be printed out by you, and you can order. Some of the materials can be gotten for free. You can order them in bulk, pamphlets and things like that in both English and Spanish. You can also get a stroke awareness kit that is just $10 and really effectively is just, we're just talking about, I think you're just paying for the videotape and the shipping. There's a video in there that is an 8-minute educational video. So, hey, there's 8 minutes of your program. You don't even have to teach. You just hit play. So good stuff. And for $10, I mean, heck, it's a heck of a bargain. And then again, all the other materials there. There's also stroke.org. This is the American Stroke Association site. And they've got some interesting things there, some just additional materials that you can include in any presentation, including, I think, very importantly, survivor stories. Stories about people who had a stroke that you can make it kind of personal to the audience you're talking with whom you're talking. We also have some Con Ed there and the American Stroke Association, because they're associated with the American Heart Association. They have all the excellent journals that have guidelines and talk about recent research and some of the directions for stroke care that are going on right now. Finally, the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, NINDS, .nih.gov, the NINDS site, and they have a ton of materials. Specifically, I think they're one of the things I look there for often is what's the ongoing research? What are they trying to find out right now? What direction are they thinking and what are they trying to learn about? And then what are some of the clinical resources that are available there? And some of that ties back into the stroke.nih.gov site, but there is some overlap there. But I like the resources on research and clinical information that's available at the NINDS site. So that's something, those resources will get you started. And believe it or not, there are links on each of those sites for 100 other resource locations for you out there. So if you don't like anything you find there, they all have additional resources, links out to other organizations and places where you can find even more, including links to like the American Diabetes Association and all of these other modifiable risk factor diseases. They link out to them. And so it's a good way for you to figure out how to tie in to those other segments of the population. So what's the next step? Let's first off say you got to set a goal. Whenever you do something like this, it's important to set goals. Look at what's been going on in your community and make a decision on how much better you can make it in the short term and in the long term, and set those goals. You know, here's the thing. If you don't achieve the goal, it can be reset, okay? But you need to set a goal to have some target to start with. You also need to think about starting small. Your goal may be educating 10,000 people, but you need to, if you think about educating 10,000 people, you're going to be completely overwhelmed. So you may be setting a goal to educate 10,000 people in your community, but you are going to worry about educating the next person you meet. And that's how we do it. You know, that's how you kind of, you know, how do you eat the elephant? You eat the elephant one bite at a time and not worry about the whole thing until you get to the end. And so that's important in these types of situations too. You want to gather support from the people you know. You know, it might be that you talk to a nurse that you know that works on a stroke unit. And hey, could she come in and talk to a group of your nursing friends and other healthcare professionals you know about working on the stroke unit? Maybe you can bring in a neurologist to talk about stroke and some of the studies and research going on. A nurse practitioner that is treating patients in the rehab setting and helping patients in the primary care setting after recovering from a stroke. You can talk, you know, you can start gathering the support from the people you know. Maybe you're a member of a civic organization already or a church organization, and you already have a ready-made group of people that would love to have you come in and speak. And by the way, all of these civic organizations in your community from the, you know, whether it's the Rotary Club, the Lions Club, the Elks, the, you know, the United Methodist Women, whatever the case may be, they are always looking for speakers to come in and talk at their next covered dish dinner or their next event. can't. They always are looking for opportunities to have somebody come in. So have that person come in and make that opportunity to reach out and just start gathering your support. Start making a list of people you'd like to talk to. And when you drive through town and you think of somebody new, and as soon as you can stop and safely do it, write down another thing on the list. Maybe you drive past a community senior center, and they always have programs and things going on there. There are always opportunities. Remember to build on your successes and adjust to your failures. Okay, what do I mean by that? Well, you're not going to, you know, this is not going to go 100% right every time. You're going to have those days when you're not going to be at your best. If you've listened to this in podcast, you know there are some podcasts that are better than others. I try my best, but sometimes I'm going to fall a little short of what I had been aiming at. But you can adjust to that. So when you have good successes, when you have a really positive response, build on that. Take that energy and use it to book your next event. And if you have an event that didn't go exactly the way you planned, well, don't get all bogged down in it. Just look at, okay, wait a minute, I need to adjust something. Something happened that wasn't right. What can I do better next time? What can I adjust so that it's more successful when this happens again? And, you know, that's the way you do these types of programs, and you become successful by making little incremental changes as you need to. Finally, the most important thing I think for anything like this is to track, study, and report on what you're doing. You need to make a list of your goals, and then, of course, you need to start tracking your successes and your progress towards that goal. You need to maybe build a small study around how you're what you're doing and the response you're getting. It's a great opportunity for some nursing research. You know, get together with a student in a master's or a nurse practitioner or PhD program or DNP program that is looking for a study, perhaps doing some nursing research, and talk about how you can do patient education and some of the things you'd like to do to improve patient outcomes through your educational outreach. They can help you. They provide you some of the educational support to do the research study appropriately, and you provide the impetus for the materials for that study and gathering the data. Also, be prepared to report on it as you go through the steps of putting this together, and you reach a point where you need more funding and you're ready to go to the next level. You're going to need to be able to gather your data and the information of your successes, and yes, also how you've adjusted to the failures you've had, because they want to know what the success rate's going to be and how you're adjusting for problems that come up. Do a report and have it available, or be prepared to put one together for those organizations that may be willing to donate to your cause, or perhaps grants that are available out there to improve on stroke outcomes in communities. And there are grants and a lot of things tied to the recent Recovery Act. There's still money out there that can be had just by asking for it and filling out the grant proposal. So look at how this could be done. And by gathering that small the information from the beginning of your program, you can be ready to reach the next level and expand it. Maybe you're just talking about your small, the town you live in. Now you can reach your entire county, or maybe you expand into the three county area in which you live. All of these things can be done by expanding to the next level, but you need to be able to track, study, and report on what you're doing. Don't forget to check out the additional resources and the other things you can find over at nursingshow.com, and follow up on those links for these great community and educational resources available for you, your healthcare colleagues, and the people around you in your community. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week. Don't forget to head over to nursingshow.com and find links to everything we discussed in the show notes for this episode. And again, that show notes link at the top of the page where you'll find all of the episodes of The Nursing Show. Don't forget, you can also follow up on this information, leave a comment on any of the articles, including the show notes pages on the site. And if you'd rather, you can always send those emails in. Send an email in with comments, suggestions, links, or corrections in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from each and every one of you, and it's really great to find out what you're doing in nursing and what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. Why do you keep coming back and listening to The Nursing Show? So definitely check in and let me know what you think of this or any other episode at nursingshow@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com/podmedic, facebook.com/podmedic. And again, become a fan of the Nursing Show page on Facebook. You know, we're getting close to 1,000. I'm setting that goal out there for us. We're approaching 800 now, and we're keeping adding people all the time. So become a fan of the Nursing Show on Facebook. If you're already a fan, go ahead and share the things from the Nursing Show Facebook fan page with the people you know in your Facebook community who might be interested in it. And you can find that by going to facebook.com/nursingshow. Pretty simple. If you're not a fan, you'll see a like button at the top of the page. You can just click that and become a fan. And I post things over there, things that are separate from the Nursing Show page, plus articles from the page will show up there with a link, and other podcasts that I know of and things that are coming around. I try to keep you up to date with separate posts there throughout the course of each week. So it's a great way to keep up with what's going on with me and the Nursing Show and the Nursing Podcast community by checking in over at the Nursing Show Facebook fan page. That's it. We're going to close out the show now with some PodSafe music, and we'll join Johanna Staley. We've played her songs here before on the show. You'll find a link in the show notes for her songs and a link also to pick up her songs over at iTunes if you'd like. You can click on that link and listen to her music over in iTunes, and if you like what you hear, go ahead and pick up or buy one of the songs. It's $1.29, and it's really a great way to show your support for artists like Johanna that share their songs with podcast listeners just like you. This is I'm Not Perfect. Go ahead and check it out. I know I'm not perfect, but I do the best I can every week, and I rely on you to keep me straight. So make sure you come back next week, listen to another episode here of The Nursing Show. And in the meantime, stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.